Chapter 51. Fight or Flight. As a biologist, Tolan knew that vast physiological changes occurred when an organism sensed danger. Adrenaline flooded the cerebral cortex, jolting the heart rate and commanding the brain to make the oldest and most intuitive of all biological decisions, whether to do battle or flee. Tolan's instinct told him to flee, and yet reason reminded him he was still tethered to Nora Manger. There was nowhere to flee, anyway. The only cover for miles was the habosphere, and the attackers, whoever the hell they were, had positioned themselves high on the glacier and cut off that option. Behind him, the wide-open sheet of ice fanned out into a 2-mile-long plain that terminated in a sheer drop to a frigid sea. Flight in that direction meant death by exposure. The practical barriers to fleeing notwithstanding, Tolan knew he could not possibly leave the others. Nora and Corky were still out in the open, tethered to Rachel and Tolan. Tolan stayed down near Rachel as the ice pellets continued to slam into the side of the toppled equipment sled. He pillaged the strewn contents, searching for a weapon, a flare gun, a radio, anything. "Run!" Rachel yelled, her breathing still strained. Then, oddly, the hailstorm of ice bullets abruptly stopped. Even in the pounding wind, the night felt suddenly calm, as if a storm had let up unexpectedly. It was then, peering cautiously around the sled, that Tolan witnessed one of the most chilling sights he had ever seen. Gliding effortlessly out of the darkened perimeter into the light, three ghostly figures emerged, coasting silently in on skis. The figures wore full white weather suits. They carried no ski poles, but rather large rifles that looked like no guns Tolan had ever seen. Their skis were bizarre as well, futuristic and short, more like elongated rollerblades than skis. Calmly, as if knowing they had already won this battle, the figures coasted to a stop beside their closest victim, the unconscious Nora Manger. Tolan rose shakily to his knees and peered over the sled at the attackers. The visitors stared back at him through eerie electronic goggles. They were apparently uninterested, at least for the moment. Delta One felt no remorse as he stared down at the woman lying unconscious on the ice before him. He had been trained to carry out orders, not to question motives. The woman was wearing a thick black thermal suit and had a welt on the side of her face. Her breathing was short and labored. One of the IM ice rifles had found its mark and knocked her unconscious. Now it was time to finish the job. As Delta One knelt down beside the oblivious woman, his teammates trained their rifles on the other targets. One on the small unconscious man lying on the ice nearby, and one on the overturned sled where the two other victims were hiding. Although his men easily could have moved in to finish the job, the remaining three victims were unarmed and had nowhere to run. Rushing to finish them off all at once was careless. Never disperse your force unless absolutely necessary. Face one adversary at a time. Exactly as they had been trained, the Delta Force would kill these people one at a time. The magic, however, was that they would leave no trace to suggest how they had died. Crouched beside the unconscious woman, Delta One removed his thermal gloves and scooped up a handful of snow. Packing the snow, he opened the woman's mouth and began stuffing it down her throat. He filled her entire mouth, ramming the snow as deep as he could down her windpipe. She would be dead within 3 minutes. This technique, invented by the Russian mafia, was called the Baelia Smert, white death. This victim would suffocate long before the snow in her throat melted. Once dead, however, her body would stay warm long enough to dissolve the blockage. Even if foul play were suspected, no murder weapon or evidence of violence would be apparent immediately. Eventually, someone might figure it out, but it would buy them time. The ice bullets would fade into the environment, buried in the snow, and the welt on this woman's head would look as if she'd taken a nasty spill on the ice, not surprising in these gale-force winds. The other three people would be incapacitated and killed in much the same way. Then Delta One would load all of them on the sled, drag them several hundred yards off course, reattach their belay lines, and arrange the bodies. Hours from now, the four of them would be found frozen in the snow, apparent victims of overexposure and hypothermia. Those who discovered them would be puzzled by what they were doing off course, but nobody would be surprised that they were dead. After all, their flares had burned out, the weather was perilous, and getting lost on the Milne ice shelf could bring death in a hurry.